Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John,
Rich,
and Kyle.
Rich and I are both U.S. Marines, and the opinions expressed on the cast are our own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's Quick Take episode, no special guest, just the love between the hosts. And Kyle, let's just kick it right over to you and get into it.
Okay, we're going to do a little bit of a micro episode today explaining something that happened just a couple days ago, earlier in the week. Basically, CISA, C-I-S-A, that is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency for the U.S. government, came out with a warning doc, which they call an insights doc, on January 18th. The title of this document is Implement Cybersecurity Measures Now to Protect Against Potential Critical Threats. Now, if you've had your head in the sand and have no idea what's going on with the current geopolitical situation in the Ukraine and with Russia, I expect that if you're listening to this cast, you should stop what you're doing and go watch some news, right? This is the only time Kyle's ever going to tell you to go watch the news because yuck. But at the same time, you should know what's going on there. There is potential conflict on the horizon. And last week, a bunch of reports came out that there were, I'm going to quote the document here, public and private entities in the Ukraine that have suffered a series of malicious cyber incidents, including website defacement and private sector reports of destructive malware on their systems that could result in severe harm to critical functions. Now, CISA is saying that this is very similar to NotPetya and WannaCry's playbooks. And for those of you who maybe are too young to remember those or don't know what we're talking about here, go read This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, an incredible book that we've pitched on this cast numerous times. Please go read this book. It's incredible. But NotPetya is probably the most destructive ransomware attack in history. I'm using air quotes around ransomware since it was widely attributed to the Russian state-sponsored cyber program, and it just pretended to be ransomware. It didn't actually have any method of payment. All that stuff was death.
Hey, Kyle, real quick. So I read several follow-on articles here, and one of the things they kind of brought out was destructive malware. Can you, real quick for the audience, does that mean that things have to explode and how many kilotons, or can you go into that?
Yeah, I think that the generic example of destructive malware as opposed to ransomware, ransomware's job is to make money, lock computers, give you a method of paying, and then unlock your computer. Destructive malware is not fire and explosion. Destructive malware is loss of capability of using an IT asset or a technical asset or an infrastructure asset in some way, shape, or form, right? So the term destruction in the true, you know, like combat narrative of the Marine Corps is probably not the right term, but it expresses the idea enough in the cyber domain to say that we're losing a capability.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. And that capability could be like the ability for you to pay your taxes, or it could be the ability for you to like spin a piece of industrial machinery or something like that. Anything that, you know, I needed to be able to do this and I cannot, that is destruction via cyber methods. Now, that is, again, NotPetya. WannaCry also happened in 2017, and this was the followed off the heels of the Sony hack attributed to North Korea and the cyber group Lazarus. These are big deals in the history of cyber warfare and malicious activity. And what we're saying now is that these things are being warned by CISA that companies all across the United States, and this is not just government agencies or not just utility companies, this is every single company in the United States is being warned to step up their cyber game because of what we are seeing happening in the Ukraine right now.
Yeah. So to Kyle's point, I just want to pause for a second and say, you know, he mentioned, you know, I'm not telling you to watch the news, and I would never tell you to do that on a frequent occasion. But what I will say is that if you are a cybersecurity professional and you are not paying attention to the happenings in the cybersecurity world, right? Because it's very easy to do this. Like, I just want the audience to understand, like, your job, if you are a technician, right, or, you know, not even a technician, if you're a program manager inside of the cybersecurity, like, profession, right? Your day is already eaten up with a ton of stuff, like all the risk you're trying to buy down in your organization, all the things you need to pay attention to. But I'm telling you, these are, to double click on Kyle's points, if you don't understand what NotPetya is, how it happened, the scheme of maneuver in which it was conducted, like, you need to go take a knee, look this up, and read it. Like, consider this like professional education for your role. Because I'll tell you, the basics of patching, right, and then logging are the things that are going to get you what you need in order to like have the time later to go look up these cyber threats, because you know you're in a state that's somewhat okay, right? So anyhow, I'll shut up now. And John, looks like you want to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, before Kyle continues, one thing I kind of pointed out from these articles as well, and something that seems a little bit different from previous advisories, is they said, keep an eye on your IT systems and your OT systems.
That's right.
So that I can't remember many articles also mentioning that. I believe Log4j might have been one of those ones as well. However, it's normally not called out like this. So I would just say, like, hey, let's think beyond the standard scope that we're kind of looking at.
Yep. So then I want to talk very quickly, because this is only a 2-page document, this thing that they published, and it covers some things that it recommends everybody do. And for those longtime listeners of the cast, we're going to do a really quick game here called Task Force Phoenix Bingo, which is going to be all the recommendations that they put in this document. We're going to read them one by one, and John and Rich are going to tell us if we've covered them before on this cast, and we'll see what our score is going to be at the end. Okay, everybody? So this is where our editor inserts some kind of game show music, if we can figure that out. So first and foremost, you should use multi-factor authentication every single place that you can.
John, yes.
John, 1 point to John. Very good. Okay. You should patch all of your software and be as up-to-date as possible.
I just said it. Rich, 1.
Rich, okay. 1 point to Rich. Good. We're doing well here. And also, I'm going to do the obligatory log4j. Here we go. You should disable unused ports.
John, I don't think we have covered this one.
Ooh, someone come to us on Twitter and let us know if we have. I believe we have, so I'm going to just claim that point for myself.
Okay.
If you're using the cloud, follow cloud best practices for security. And of course, CISA has a document on that.
In unison, or we'll finish each other's sentences. Yes, we have, Kyle.
Several times.
Yes, yes.
Kyle's written such things.
Yeah, I've written a few thousand words of this topic. I'll also say we're going to have a link to this doc, a link to the CISA Cloud Best Practices doc. We're going to have a bunch of links that go along with this in the show notes. So just, you know, click around on your podcast listening device of choice. Next one, regularly perform vulnerability scans and penetration tests.
John, Rich has said this so many times, I'm going to award him points.
Okay.
He has not said it on the podcast. However, I've heard him say it no less than 6,000 to 7,000 times. So he should get.
Okay, got it.
The only thing I'll add in here, authenticated vulnerability scans. Please do authenticated vulnerability scans in addition to your non-auth. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to pause and say, in case you're wondering, like, what is he talking about right now? So unauthenticated scan would be, for example, you just randomly popping up from the internet and running Nmap on somebody. Unauthenticated scan. You are not authenticated to the servers. You don't have admin or some other type of account that allows you to log onto the device and check these things. You're simply throwing some packets and finding out whether they hit. That is unauthenticated. Authenticated would mean you have an account and you are doing this.
And I'll also add that an unauthenticated scan against something on the cloud is the most useless penetration or vulnerability test you can run, and you are throwing money away to do so. Okay, so this document actually calls all the things that we just talked about steps to reduce the likelihood of a damaging cyber intrusion. It doesn't say to prevent, just reduce the likelihood. This is powerful and purposeful language. And then it goes into take steps to more quickly detect a potential intrusion. And these steps are monitor for anomalies on your network, including logs.
John, we have said this a bunch of times.
Yeah, John didn't even need to buzz in there. If you don't know that John loves logs, he is iHeartLog all day, every day.
Log4j, weird night.
Log for John. Yep, yeah, right, I think this is a conspiracy. Okay.
It's not wrong.
That's
it's
right.
Not wrong.
That's right. Hashtag aliens. All right. The next one is run either antivirus, anti-malware, anti-ransomware software, and critically, make sure your signatures are up to date.
I'm pretty sure we did a whole episode on like how it was weird for like crypto mining and AV to be tied together. Mm-hmm. But yes, using it is a best practice.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then this last one on the potentially detect intrusions faster is very interesting and very powerful, which is it specifically states if you work with Ukrainian organizations to take extra care and isolate all of that traffic from those organizations and very closely monitor it before allowing it on your network.
Yeah, we definitely have not done that. However, we should take a moment of pause and think about what that actually means.
Can I jump in here, John?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I think we did on the first ever TFP cast. I think so. Where I'm going here is we talked about if you are using cloud services to ensure the blast radius of the application which you have in the cloud, so to make sure that the compromise could not move from network component to network component, don't actually attach it to your on-premise network via some sort of network connection. Just keep it in the cloud and use the front end to come back and forth through API calls, right? Like no back end connection downtown premise site. So I think I could be wrong. We can come back stat boy later, but I'm pretty sure we talked about this.
Is Trebek giving him points for this or not?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like you're talking about something where there is a less than one amount of trust going on in the network. You know, math is hard, but
I think I award you zero trust points, Kyle.
There we go. Zero trust points. Check. Ding, ding. All right.
But seriously, let's like, we are saying be careful from coming from a nation.
That's right.
And I like not to dismiss Rich's points, which are really important, and that would certainly help you in this capacity. But for a U.S. government organization to come out and say, like, be careful of traffic from another, that to me seems incredibly significant.
Yes. If I had to pick one statement from this entire document that carries the most weight, it is that one to every cyber specialist or security professional anywhere in the United States. So the next section of this talks about how to make sure that your organization is ready if there is a compromise. So here's how to reduce it, but not prevent it. And then here's how to make sure you can detect it if you get infected. And now if you're infected, here's how to make sure you know how to respond. You can see how this is going, right? Like we talk about in the cyberspace community all the time, like you can never prevent it all. And so don't put all your eggs in the prevent basket. Put a lot of your eggs in the respond quickly and be adaptable basket. So very first thing they say, have a crisis response team.
Yeah, the thing to note here is that everybody on the crisis response team does not need to be technical. You should have an event manager, right? You should have an event manager. I'll just leave it at that.
And we did do a podcast about that.
All right, the next thing is to have the ability to contact all of your people that are on such team and have the ability to surge additional personnel to support that team.
That is easier said than done.
Well, I think in the military, we have these things called recall rosters, and we have, you know, OPEXs that kind of run through and the ability to kind of pull in additional stuff. I think most companies would struggle with that.
Well, I mean, let me poke a little bit here. Do we have the ability to do that? Sure. But I mean, those types of challenge, it's not like we have some kind of special relationship as far as it comes to understanding of technology and networks and permissions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I would say is if you have not thought this through ahead of time, that doesn't count. Your surge and response personnel have to be pre-contacted, pre-trained, pre-vetted, and put on the network. If you just say like, yut, yut, you know, star dot star, the recall roster, and bring people
in here.
You will not elicit the response you are looking for here. Again, this needs to be pre-planned, pre-thought.
So then, John, this goes on to the very next bullet in this document, which is, and I can hear Rich smiling all the way across the country right now, conduct a tabletop exercise to ensure that all participants understand their roles during any incident.
Yeah, Kyle, I mean,
it's 10 points to Rich.
Having a run book, right? Private sector generally refers to these as run books. Public sector generally refers to these as SOPs, standard operating procedures, right? And everybody just overlooks them and sticks them in a desk drawer. But like taking that thing out and running through it is really important.
That's right. So the very next section talks about how to maximize your organization's resilience to a destructive cyber incident. So, okay, you tried to prevent it. Cool. Then you got hit anyway, and you tried to respond quickly or detect that you were infected quickly. Okay, now you've got your, how do we actually respond to this thing quickly? And the very last section is how do you make sure that it doesn't impact you as badly? How do you maximize your resilience. The very first thing, test your backups.
I am taking credit for this one. Literally every meeting I have ever been at, when someone mentions a backup, my next question is like, awesome, who tested that? Give me the name of the person.
Yep.
And that generally gives you your answer on whether you're good there. Like, cool, who did that and when was the last time they did?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny to ask the question of like, is it on tape? What building's it in?
Yep.
Do you know where the building is that the tapes are at? Because usually all the answers to those questions are no.
I will say that every time I talk to a customer in my normal job and I am asked about backup or disaster recovery, the very first question, which tells me exactly everything I need to know about the remaining minutes that I will spend talking to this customer or consulting that I will give them, is when is the last time you successfully tested your current backup strategy? That is, it's always the very first question. And the answer to that will be shocking and enlightening across the board. So, okay, test your backups. I feel like that is, of all the things in this document, probably the most echoed thing from every person in IT. The next thing, which I think, again, is extremely powerful, is that if you use industrial control systems or you use OT in addition to IT to test your manual controls immediately to make sure that things will continue to work and operate if the network becomes unavailable.
Yeah, so I'll jump in here, Kyle, and just say this much. Like, this is one area I think we haven't really dove extremely deeply on this cast, because this is a very niche area of cybersecurity. And there are people who spend decades of their life figuring out the interface between information technology and operational technology, or OT, right, and how to link them together. What I will tell you is there are really, really, really good white papers that talk about how to do this correctly. And if you manage, run, or are in an organization that has operational technology, and that operational technology supports like real world safety of flight or life things, and you haven't read anything on it yet, or you haven't gone to training, please, 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 please take a knee, start reading, and just start asking your leadership team, how can I get training on this?
Right. I'll also say that we have covered this at least on one complete podcast during the Colonial Pipeline hack episode that we've done. So I'm going to take a point for that one. And with that, that comes to the end of this document. And you may be thinking to yourself, well, that seems pretty basic, but I just want to call out, it's really good guidance. And it feels like such a low bar for us to say is like, hey, please make sure you're doing this. But everyone's got to remember that the average organization in our country doesn't have a robust cybersecurity program. And the basics are what you need to be brilliant at, right? Use this guidance. This is a really well-crafted two-pager on how to suck less at cybersecurity. And I wish I could do it better justice, but you know, kudos to the CISA people who wrote this.
So I love that Kyle's weighing in here and saying how good it is, because he spends a lot of time doing this and security is first and foremost of his mind. Kind of to take another approach at this, you can run a super high performing, super supporting the warfighter type of network and not do a single one of these things. And you can feel day to day like what an amazing job you are doing. And it's easy to kind of, even though as you say this out loud, it's like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh shoot. I should have done that. So while I definitely agree that it's low bar and there are things that people should be doing, the other side of the coin is on your kind of like 9 to 5 running from fire to fire, it's super easy to do an amazing job and not either have the bandwidth or put the diligence in to do this stuff. And so if that's where you're at, then, you know, just take a minute and be like, hey, okay, here's some things we need to start knocking down kind of target by target.
Awesome. So in closing, I hope everyone goes and reads this. I hope everyone remembers that you cannot stop things all the time. And so you need to get good at detecting, responding, and mitigating in advance against cyber threats. And if you're in the cyberspace community in your day-to-day job right now, please make sure you know what's going on and around the Ukrainian border. And please make sure that you are doing what you need to do to protect yourself, your data, your organization, and the nation from anything and everything.
Yep. Now is the time to stay on your toes and not get
That's
off
right.
balance.
That's right.
Sorry, Kyle, keep going.
So No, yeah. I just wanted to thank everybody for listening to our bingo game, or what I will call, whose security, cybersecurity line is it anyway? A show where sadly nothing is made up, but the points still don't matter. So I want to congratulate Rich for 10 million points of victory. John, you were so close with 15.
I'll strive for better next time. Rich, do you have any knife hands you want to give us here, or have we shot the knife hand load for the day?
Patch and log. Knife hand done.
Patch and log. Love it. Hey, so one last thing before I go to outro here. So this is episode number 50. I don't think any one of us would have thought that when we recorded the first one, we were going to go 50 episodes, that we would have this many guests, this very topics. It's been awesome. So thank you all so much for listening, and a super duper extra special cloudy secure thank you to Sarah Clarkson, who crushes the editing game every single other week, and we appreciate deeply.
And I'll just let everybody know, we do not sound this good on the first takes. I promise you, we're just a bunch of idiots out talking about cybersecurity all the time. So Sarah makes us sound this good. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah.
Dear listeners, thank you so much for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at USMC underscore TFPHOENIX. That is at USMC underscore Task Force Phoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and giving us a 5-star review with comment. And with that, we are out.